Welcome to the conversation on Coast Community Radio. Stevie Wonder giving us higher ground today. Teachers keep on teaching. What you gonna do? What is your next year looking like? Today's topic on the conversation is distance learning in the schools. This can be elementary, middle school, high school, community college, university. Are you a parent of a student? Are you a student? Are you an instructor? Are you an administrator? You're probably too busy to call in then. Ha ha. 503-325-0010. I am really curious to know what your experience has been. I don't have kids in the schools. I just have a couple of rabbits. And they're lazy. They're not learning anything. 503-325-0010. Please join in on the conversation about distance learning. I'd like to hear all sides of this conversation. I'd like to hear from parents or teachers, students. What's working? Was it a Zoomy kind of a semester for you? Is anything particularly challenging? I was talking to a KMUN station volunteer a couple of days ago about it, who has a long history in the public school system. And he thinks that this could be a jumping off point for making a change to the system, because maybe there are things that we could be doing better. Do you have any ideas? Do you have any comments? Do you have any concerns? Do you have any questions? Give us a call, 503-325-0010. I think we've got our first call. Hi, are you there?
I am here.
Hi, please go ahead.
Yeah, I'm concerned about the issue of access to the internet. I don't have a student in school now. My son has grown. But I live in an area, I'm in Wakayakum County, where we don't have internet access. I can drive down to the community center, the library, or the extension office and get access there. But I'm wondering what's happening throughout the broadcast area. What do people do in Oahu? What do people do up the Long Beach Peninsula? What are people doing in Clatsop? Where do you go? And especially if you don't have a car where you can park outside and get access, what are people doing these days for the people who need internet access?
That's a really good question, yeah. And I think the utility providers could be part of that conversation. And I will say that Joanne Rideout, our news director, has been working on a long-form story about internet access in rural and underserved areas.
Well, I'll be looking forward to seeing that then.
Yeah, stay tuned.
Okay, will do.
Thanks for the call.
You bet.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering if possibly, since we may be dealing with this virus for some time and maybe a comeback, that in schools where you may need social distancing, if kids could come in every other day, one day they're in school social distancing while the other half of them come in, the other half are at home online as they've been doing it.
And so they would be both in the same class with the same teacher, but half are at home or half are at school, and then they flip-flop the next day?
Yes.
Yeah, that's an idea.
And
that's actually something I'm not sure about, is are schools really reopening to distance, to socially distanced kids, or is the plan for next fall to do it from home again? I don't have my ear to the tracks on this, and so that's why I'm putting it out to the wider community.
My guess is that the plates are so full with the immediate opening that fall school is a long way away. Is my guess. And as for country internet, I have in dual satellite connection because the CenturyLink line, I'm on Highway 3, but the CenturyLink where I am is terrible. But there's always a satellite option. And there's so many trillions of dollars in this world, way up there in the ether sphere. It's not in the reach of poor people. They can just float down a few trillion and put in satellite connections for everybody who's rural.
Well, if I see the ether, I'll ask him to drop that trillion or two. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead. What's your comment or question?
Hi. I have lots of comments. I work in one of the local schools. I work in the special education department. And one of the biggest issues is that idea of distance learning for all. There's been such a great inequity in students being able to access their education, and I think it becomes exacerbated when you think about these students that actually have special education needs, and they need to have those extra interventions that, unfortunately, because of the inability to access the internet, they've just kind of slipped through the cracks, you know, and I think that's been an ongoing discussion across the state with ODE, how do we access these kids? But meanwhile, they just are lost in the education system. And then, you add to that those kids that are, come from a culturally or linguistically diverse background. I mean, those families have a horrible time accessing them, being kind of on the front lines of calling every day families or every week, trying to get a hold of families. And it's been really tough. It's been really tough. You know, I know that there's a lot of discussion as to, one of the callers previously was talking about that, the internet access. And I know that that's something that the school systems are going to have to resolve. But, with this, education for all, this distance learning for all that happened effective, April 13th, it didn't happen. that for all piece is really critical. And I think that that's something that really needs to be acknowledged. I know for general education kids, some of that, not to say that that wasn't accessible, but I think coming from a special education background, a lot of my fellow colleagues, it was really difficult for them to support those kids that had extra needs.
I can't imagine how challenging this is right now.
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy. And, I think that's kind of some of the inequity, too, that you see within the education program with, teachers and whatnot. I know that teachers have a lot to do. I know that they've been busy, as well. But I also have heard conversely, where a lot of teachers are like, I do my, one post and I'm done. And for education, we have individualized education plans, programs, IEPs that we have to implement. So we're having to look at every single student and that, has those IEPs, and be able to support that individual student and trying to figure out how to do that when, the supports are inaccessible. That's been really hard. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges coming in next year is, how can we better serve those students that have those? I mean, yes, we have to serve all our students, but, when you think about those students that have been identified with disabilities, to support those students in an equitable fashion.
So we don't have anyone waiting to call. So can I ask you a couple questions and see what you think?
Sure.
So the first question I have is, whether technology is really the solution or the answer to this. And so is it really even possible to teach over the internet? And so then maybe I'll let you answer that question first. What do you think?
That's the challenge, for some students, yes. And for some students, no. One piece is that element of, the actual technology and the internet and those, having that kind of access. But the other part has to do with the student, himself or herself, the fact is that not all students are able to attend to that kind of education. They need that one-on-one. They need that in-person contact, and unfortunately, technology is it can only go so far, can only support them so far. I mean, I have
student that the reality is, I've moved into working online with them, even in kind of a like Zoom format or Google Meet format. But still, they're not getting anything, or may not be able to get anything from it, because it's just not a format that works for them to be able to access information and to be able to really benefit from, you know, whatever educational resources we're providing or, you know, opportunities we're providing for them at that moment in time.
I think the part that I worry about the most with using the computer as your learning tool is that everything that you see on the computer is not the actual thing.
Exactly.
I'm into thingness. And so if you're going to teach a kid what an elephant is, it's better to go to a zoo and show them an elephant than to show them a picture of an elephant in a book, or in this case, on the internet. And so I think that that's the thing that I'm concerned about, is how tangible is the actual content, even if you do have really good internet access and technical know-how to get your Zoom app up and running.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I work with, you know, professionals like, you know, an occupational therapist and whatnot. And, you know, how do you do that? It's a challenge, you know, when a lot of what you're doing might be hand over hand and really just in that moment, you know. You know, we do a lot of, you know, drawing it's in that moment that you can't do it on a computer. You have to have a pre-plan and hope that everything goes along, you know, perfectly in that plan. And that doesn't, you know, this is the real world and it doesn't happen that way. And so, unfortunately, it's just very, they're not getting the benefit of what they really need, you know, with this distance learning for all. And it's just, like I said, it's a real challenge, you know, with those students. And like I said, also too, one of the things, you know, add to it are the families that, you know, come from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds, and, you know, they're lost in the technology, and being able to access that is really difficult. And, you know, I have students that, you know, are both, you know, trying to provide them with the interventions that they need, but then navigating that that language barrier. So it's definitely a challenge. And, you know, again, that for all piece has been the big, you know, the big question mark when it comes to, you know, really putting equity in practice.
So if you are just joining us, this is The Conversation on KMUN, and we are talking about distance learning in schools, as is necessitated by the COVID crisis. And so call us with your thoughts, comments, questions, 503-325-0010. We've got two open lines, and we would love to hear from you, especially if you're an educator or a parent or a student who is going through some of these processes. I feel for you, and I'd like to hear a little bit about your story and how it's going. So my second question that I was going to ask you was referring back to that conversation that I had a couple of days ago. Do you think that the technology thing and the Zoom thing and the distance learning thing is a Band-Aid or a solution, or, you know, is the goal to get back to the system as it exactly was, or is this an opportunity to take a broad stroke look at the system and see if there's a different or better way of doing things?
I think, from my own personal perspective, I think that, you know, yes, there's there has definitely been some good that has come from this. It's definitely expanded our awareness of, you know, hey, maybe this is a way to implement education and support and supplement our education. Do I think it's not going away? That's for sure. And, you know, going into the fall, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of discussion as to what that's going to look like, and possibly a hybrid model where, you know, some students are in the building and some students, you know, they're kind of fluctuating between the online platforms and outside of the classroom and then coming into the building. So I definitely think it's not going away. So I think that's the part where, you know, as educators, we have to really think about, you know, how can we be better at supporting our students? You know, I think that's what a lot of the schools are doing now, like, you know, over the summer, thinking about, okay, how can we do this better? I mean, the reality is we were all in crisis mode, you know, it was just kind of like go. And it was sink or swim, you know? And so it was kind of a reactionary process. And so I think kind of coming back into it, obviously we're going to have some time in the summer to reflect on that and kind of think about what can be done better and how to better support ourselves, our own education, on how to implement these educational platforms and teach our students through those platforms. So that when they come in, you know, we can be a better guide for them, you know, to access it. And, I just don't think it's going away.
That's a good point. And so at what point do we stop being reactionary and start being proactive to building a system that's ideal rather than a finger in the dike, if you will? I think one of the follow-up questions I would ask about approaching things differently is, and I know that you're a special ed teacher and that you're not responsible for the architecture of the school system, but I still value just your personal opinion and perspective. So my question is, are class sizes too large, and do you solve sort of the social distancing problem by trying to figure out a way to get much smaller groups of people together? Because I still think that the human aspect of teaching is critical. Everything about my education that was valuable was because of the people. And I don't think I would have felt that if I was looking at a computer screen, because that's not a person and you're not interacting. And those are really just the important pieces of it, or very significant pieces of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for sure. And I think, you know, in light of all the social distancing, right, we're going to have to consider you know, the spacing of children, which, you know, how do you do that with a kindergartner? it doesn't happen. They don't have that kind of awareness.
How do you play space tag?
You know, and that's the good thing, right? I mean, that's ultimately, hopefully, you know, the goal of education is to have people that come out into the community and become a part of a community. And it's those pro-social interactions that we're trying to support, but we're supporting pro-social interactions in a social distancing, you know, paradigm, and which is really, it's interesting. And so, you know, those are all things that, you know, taking into consideration those logistics. I mean, yeah, you can come up with these great plans, which I think, you know, would work for a seventh grader and eighth grader as far as, you know, space and all that, but how that's going to be implemented with a younger child that, you know, doesn't have that awareness necessarily, you know, they're really invested in being social with their peers. And that's a good thing, but, you know, unfortunately, in this situation, you know, that's going to be part of, I guess, you know, part of the instruction, you know, that safety and health and wellness aspect.
I did see something about preventing underlying health conditions that put us at risk as a culture or as a population. And so I thought that made a lot of sense too. One thing that comes to mind with this is that we already were under the strain of insufficient childcare, especially in our area. And so how do you see the childcare piece of this fitting in? Are things getting, kids are at home nowadays with parents, but our schools and childcare, and another observation I've made recently is that it was my understanding that a lot of childcare was provided by local church communities and church groups. And that's something that I feel like I'm seeing less and less of, is churches are kind of becoming vacant and being sold off and converted into venues or some such thing. And there's just a little bit less religiosity in our culture nowadays. And I feel like childcare might have been one of the pieces of collateral damage that fell away with that. Do you have any thoughts on childcare?
Well, I mean, yeah, definitely schools. I mean, you know, definitely schools play a part of childcare for parents, you know. And I think, you know, with everything kind of shutting down, you know, parents have been home because they haven't been working, and students have been home with parents, and, you know, that has its own dynamics and stressors and whatnot. I mean, not just the that everybody's home, but, you know, the financial impact of parents losing jobs and things like that. You know, but as things are shifting and changing, I mean, that's a big question and a big concern, because school does, you know, serve as childcare for a lot of parents, you know, and as they're transitioning back to work, what happens next year if, you know, if it does become a hybrid model, you know, how do you shift the schedule, and how do you, you know, if it's every other day that a child is going to school, or they're only going to school in the morning? I mean, that's a valid consideration that I know districts are toying with right now. Like, how is this going to impact families and their, you know, work availability and their availability to be home to support their child? You know, it's a valid, you know, and like you said, there's not a lot of childcare. And then, you know, you have those kids that are sort of that middle ground. They're not really, really young, but they're not necessarily old enough to be at home, you know, taking care of younger siblings, or just even taking care of themselves. So I think that is one of the, you know, concerns that the school districts have, as well as parents have, as, you know, in regards to next year, and, you know, what does childcare look like for them going back to work?
Will you tell me your first name again?
I'm sorry?
Will you tell me your first name again?
Paulette.
Paulette, do you want to hang on the line for just a second? I'm going to bring another caller on.
Sure.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Hi, my name is Meredith. I work in a couple of the high schools, and I also have a 10-month-old. And I guess my comment is there was passed a recent piece of legislation supporting families and working families, and there is the FMLA paid leave for families, and it's kind of tough because you have to be really in the know about the legislation to be able to advocate for yourself as a working parent, but it is available for folks, and I forget the exact stipulations, but I've been able to get it through my work, where I work 20 hours a week, and then 20 hours I get paid two-thirds of my salary time off. So it's a really great resource for me, and it's meant that instead of being overwhelmed 100% of the time, it's taken off a lot of the pressure. So that exists for folks, and I'm not sure how widely known families know about this opportunity.
So tell us the name of the program again, or the legislation.
So I guess if you look online, I think it's for, you know, companies or organizations that have at least 50 or more employees. But basically, it's FMLA paid leave, and it was through the last piece of legislation. And I'll email in the exact name of it. I forget, but basically, I'm able to get that through my employer. So it's kind of like a second maternity leave that I've been able to lock in.
Well, so I'm glad you were able to share that with the crew here.
Yeah, it's meant a lot of, you know, reduced stress for us, for sure. So, the exact name of that, so families can seek that out if they're eligible.
Yeah, will you email that to susan@coastradio.org? She's taking care of our Facebook page these days, and I think she'll be happy to post something about it on our Facebook page.
Yeah, I'll email that right now.
Great. Thanks, Meredith. Let's see. Paulette, are you still there?
Yep.
Hey, so getting towards the top of the show, did you have any other thoughts or comments for us this morning?
Oh, no.
You really carried the conversation. I appreciate
your
call.
Up, you know.
Yeah. Well, I certainly wish you the best in the coming months and years. hope we can move away from reactionary solutions and proactive improvements.
Oh, for sure.
Well, I'm going to let you go, and thanks so much for your call.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Next caller, you are on the air. Hi, go ahead.
Hi, Graham. This is Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy.
I teach down in Seaside at Broadway Middle School, or formerly Broadway Middle School. This distance learning as we have it right now is really, really difficult because the inequities for families and, some people, I have two kids in college, and for them to transition to working from home in a pretty stable house where we're all working parents and, and know how to support them pretty well, fairly stable, it was really hard and a difficult transition. And we all struggled to know, separate the difference between home and work and home and school. And for families where the parents have to work, or for families where the parents are just struggling to cope, to expect kids to learn at an even somewhat equivalent pace is really challenging. For me, my number one goal was to make sure people were okay. And I didn't want academics to stress anybody out in any way. And so I was like, if you're not in a place to do it, reach out and let me know that you're struggling and we'll make accommodations. And I know that maybe that isn't great for learning, but it's, the other thing that I heard in a webinar is that in this day and age, if people are still speaking kindly to each other at dinner, they just learned a lot of social, emotional, and resiliency where they were maybe yesterday kind of freaking out and couldn't talk to each other kindly. And so there's some other learning going on that's maybe not academic, but maybe has been forgotten a little bit by the culture. And so maybe they're, that learning is just as valuable. So, it's confusing as an educator of how best to do this. And looking forward, I don't see how education can continue in this large scale kind of production room, approach. I think we have to look at community schools.
What do community schools
and local based to make it work?
What would community schools look like, Jeremy?
I think it would be multi-age, multi-adult, working with each other. You have certain standards and benchmarks to meet, and maybe you have different classrooms that once you've met those benchmarks, regardless of the day or the age or, the time of the year, you move on to the next one. You're bringing in people to teach skills from the community. So baking and dancing and music and building and whatever is best for them. And each community, it would look different because they have different community needs.
I think that's
my vision for where we would go in the future.
One thing I was wondering is if we kind of changed some of the ways of doing things, is where would they be done if we did bring in more teachers and have smaller classrooms? I mean, are the schools kind of at capacity as it is, or are there spaces available? Are there other spaces besides schools that could get transitioned into use in the meantime?
I think it's that. I think there's other spaces besides schools. There are other spaces in addition to schools. If schools can't have as many kids per room, then we need somewhere to house the kids that can't be housed at the schools. And, I imagine I know in our town and up and down the coast, there are buildings with empty office fronts, and you wouldn't need a lot of space because you could go outside and it's play space, and you're going to look in the estuaries and on the beaches, and, you go walk down the street to the bakery. And so you're really involving the community in a way that I know we in public schools want to do, but it's really challenging to do effectively and consistently. I think it's a good opportunity for a whole rethink and maybe redesign of education. I hope that our states and public departments of education are on board with something like that.
Do you know enough about the education system to know kind of at what levels those sorts of decisions start to be presented or made?
Well, I think you need the leeway from the top down, that would be a state-by-state thing that would allow that to happen. I mean, I think that you could probably utilize the charter system to start doing it from grassroots up if people said they wanted to start charter schools or public nonprofit schools or even private schools with some, you know, hidden donor or maybe not hidden donor funding. I don't know. I think we just need to think creatively and meet those communities to find it. You know, in my mind, I've been in middle school my whole career. I want to get a similar to that mentality, middle school, alternative school, because we have so many disengaged students that are really good learners, but they just don't fit in our system or are jaded by it or anxious of the, you know, social stuff. And if there was a small group where you're working with one or two adults all day long, they'd have success and figure out how to, you know, where they want to be in this world and what they want to see different, I think.
Well, Jeremy, thanks for the call. That's all the time we have.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Sorry I called so late.
Oh, it's okay.